Welcome to JGL Law for You. This podcast is sponsored by Joseph Greenwald and Lake, a suburban Maryland law firm that has been representing clients throughout the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area and across the country for close to 50 years. JGL Law for You is a podcast by lawyers, yes, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law for You, we will bring you up close and personal with our lawyers and some special guests who will be discussing how to navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, and other current events, how they may affect you, your family, or your business. Today, we're talking with two of JGL's family lawyers, Allison McFadden and Pat Draga. Our topic today is prenuptial agreements. What are they, and do I need one? Allison McFadden is a senior counsel at JGL, where she has been practicing exclusively family law for the last 7 years. She is a member of the Howard and Montgomery County Bar Associations and was a former co-chair of the Youth Courthouse Project Committee. She is licensed to practice law in Maryland and the District of Columbia, and her practice includes clients from all walks of life who are going through a divorce or custody dispute. Pat Draga has practiced exclusively family law for 40 years, primarily in Montgomery County, Maryland, representing high net worth individuals. He is a fellow of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers and has recently been named as one of the top 100 lawyers in DC Super Lawyers. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming along.
Thanks for having us, David.
Nice to be with you, David.
So let's dive right in. Why don't we start with what is a prenuptial agreement and who needs one? What exactly is it? We hear about it, we read about it, but tell the folks what a prenuptial agreement is.
Thanks, David. A prenuptial agreement is a private agreement. It's entered into by people who intend to get married, but they enter into it before they get married. And the intention there is to use a contract to resolve issues in a way that may be different from the way that the law might insist that those issues be resolved. There are two primary areas that prenuptial agreements apply. The first is estate rights. And of course, it means exactly what it says, that the law of a state will have a certain way of disposing of your estate at the time of your death. If you want that to be different in certain circumstances, you can make it different by using a prenuptial agreement.
So just to clarify, so if I have a significant amount of money, if I have a significant net worth and I'm getting married, maybe it's my second or third marriage and I'm 50 or 60 or years old or more, and I've accumulated significant wealth, I've had children previously, does a prenuptial agreement make sure that I can leave things to my children or others instead of my new spouse if something were to happen to me?
Yeah, that's exactly what some people use a prenuptial agreement for. It certainly can do all the things that you set out, but you have to negotiate it. So this is something that is based on a negotiation between two individuals in advance. So you'd be asking your spouse to agree to certain other arrangements from those that the state would impose at the time of the death of a party.
David, I think that's probably the most common thing that people think of when they think of prenups. They're for people who have a ton of money, people who are older. I think there recently especially has been a trend towards prenups where maybe the parties don't have a lot of wealth, maybe they're younger, but they have other interests that they are concerned about. One particularly interesting prenup that I worked on involved reproductive material related to IVF. It was a same-sex couple, and they knew they wanted to have children. They knew they would have to go through IVF, and they wanted to reach an agreement as to how they would deal with any embryos or anything like that should they end up divorcing in the future. And that's an area where, you know, the law is certainly evolving and unclear. And so a prenup is one vehicle where they can make that determination themselves and not have to rely on what the law might be in 10 or 15 years down the road.
Allison, is that prenuptial agreement, is that a contract like other contracts that people might sign?
Yep, it's a contract. So there, it's going to be binding between the parties. There are certain portions of a prenup that we have to advise clients about very carefully, because not everything's enforceable, right? So you can put anything you want in a prenup, but there are going to be certain topics that no matter what you put in there, the court won't necessarily enforce them. So some people might say, well, what about those kids? We have the children. Can we reach an agreement ahead of time about what we want to do with custody? And that's something where the court is not going to be bound to what you and your fiance agree to.
So if someone's is getting married and considering whether or not they should have a prenuptial agreement, they need a lawyer for this? Is this something that someone should have a lawyer for?
I think you definitely need a lawyer, primarily because what Allison said, that there are some technical requirements, and there just needs to be an understanding of how the law works and how it works in this particular area. The relationship between people who are about to marry is special. And so you have a higher obligation to the party you're about to marry than you might otherwise have. And so a lawyer advising in this circumstance for both sides is one of the best ways to make sure that the agreement ultimately will be enforceable.
All right. So a few minutes ago, we talked about a prenuptial agreement being a contract. And Pat, you just added sort of an interesting layer that raises a question. When you say that the relationship between two people planning to get married is special, can you tell us, first of all, what do you mean by that? And second of all, how does that relationship, or how can it affect what you guys are talking about in terms of this contract being enforceable later?
Well, the contract will be enforceable based on two principles, two requirements, and those are full disclosure of the assets and other aspects that you intend to resolve in your prenuptial agreement. And the second aspect is true voluntariness. We can talk about those two later. But in terms of what it means to be fully disclosed, the concept of a confidential relationship is what it's called. This special relationship that we talked about a few minutes ago is called a confidential relationship, where you are almost, you're like a trustee for the other person. So you have to go a great deal further than you might otherwise go in a normal contract to make sure that that person really understands what you're disclosing and what that person is giving up when he or she signs the agreement. What that affects in terms of enforceability is where the burden might lie to prove that the agreement is fair when it's entered into.
You're talking about in the event later, once the agreement is signed, right? And then somebody tries to say that I didn't understand it, maybe, or I didn't have counsel, or it wasn't fair.
Right. All those things. And that comes up at the tail end when you're trying to enforce the agreement that may be many, many years old at that point, and the circumstances economically and otherwise may have changed considerably from the time when the agreement was entered into to the time when it's to be enforced.
So when a person is launching on, and I'll ask the both of you, launching on this determination as to whether or not he or she needs a prenuptial agreement, what should they keep in mind in terms of what you just talked about, whether it can be enforceable or whether it may not be enforceable and therefore not worth the paper that it was written on?
I think the biggest thing is you want to think about this sooner than later. This isn't something that you should put off until the last minute. The closer in time that a prenup is signed to the wedding, the more likely a party is to say that they signed it under duress, that they didn't have ample time to show it to their counsel. So making sure that it's brought up early on, and even if the actual prenup isn't drafted right away, at least getting some education about what it is you're trying to preserve, what options are available to you, so that you can start that process sooner than later.
I agree completely with what Allison just said. And if you look at it as certainly as important as what the invitations look like and where the wedding party is going to be and all the rest of the things you talk about before you get married, you might think about talking about a prenup. Not that everybody needs one, but that if you find yourself in that situation, that you're talking about it much earlier than when you're signing contracts to have parties for your wedding and creating stress and pressure that a person might feel obligated to go forward with the agreement and the wedding.
Takes a bit of a shine off the romance, I suppose, huh?
You know what, those down and dirty topics, though, are what marriage is all about, right? If you can't talk now about money, if you can't talk now about how you want to raise your kids and what that division of labor looks like, in a way, that's setting you up for trouble down the road, right?
No question about that.
Well, most of us would agree, I think, for all you see on TV, probably economic issues are the biggest issues that we see most frequently in our family cases. What brings the people to the parting of the ways?
Let's go back to this time before these folks are married, and you mentioned you both talked about having this conversation. When someone comes to see you to discuss whether or not they want to get a prenup done, what if any suggestions do you make to them in terms of how to bring the topic up? This is not touchy-feely, we love each other kind of a discussion. Yeah, it's difficult, no question about it. But do you have any advice for folks as to how they ought to bring that discussion up, broach that topic with their soon-to-be spouse?
It probably isn't best brought up over cake testing, right?
Maybe wine tasting.
I think, you know, there's other conversations that might kind of dovetail into it. Do we want to have kids? If we do want to have kids, is one person going to stay home? In terms of if you own a business, you can approach this in terms of, you know, I want you to, it's not that I'm trying to not give you what you're due or a certain portion once we get divorced, but I'm concerned about maintaining control over this business. This is my baby. I started this business. And kind of explaining maybe why you are interested in this and going about it in a way that's fair to both people and inviting the other person to raise any concerns or issues that they might want to also address and put into the prenup. I think the more buy-in that both people have and more input both people have, the easier the process is going to be to kind of sell the other person on.
And you can imagine this sort of getting out ahead of the issue in almost every circumstance where you have an economic circumstance that would benefit from considering a prenuptial agreement. Inheritances are another one, the close family business, as Allison mentioned. If you're talking about that in the broad sense of all the issues that you discuss when you're getting married, like where you're going to live and, you know, somebody's going to school and having children, and will somebody step out of the workforce? It doesn't become the one primary issue that's a stumbling block. It's just one of the many adult problems and issues that we face when we're going to create a partnership called a marriage.
You talked about kids a little bit earlier. Can people who are planning to have children, can they make any agreements that might go into a prenuptial agreement that would later be binding on both parties?
That's a no. The Maryland courts are going to have to look at what's in the best interest of the children at the time of a divorce. So, you know, if you include it in there, it's not going to have any binding effect.
But I think you keep in mind what we said, Allison said earlier, that's with respect to the best interest of children. But with respect to the relationship of the parties, you certainly would want to have in mind that if somebody gave up a career and anticipated giving up a career to help raise children, that should be certainly something to be considered. It might be a fork in the road that if we have kids, the agreement's going to go in one direction, or our distribution of our estate's going to go in one direction. And if we don't have kids, it's going to go in another direction. That's certainly something that should be considered in a prenuptial agreement.
Okay.
One other, in regards to Pat mentioned earlier, second marriages, if you have children from a first marriage, I think lots of times those parents going into a second marriage are looking to try and protect inheritance rights for those children from the first relationship or prior relationship. So that's another way that children might come into play with a prenup.
And what about parents? How about the people that are getting married, their parents? Do they sometimes get involved because they want to make sure their son or their daughter is going to maintain his or her interest in the business or whatever it is they want to give to them?
Yes, involved is a nice word.
We're smiling because they always do.
That's another layer that you as a lawyer, I suppose you two as lawyers have to navigate.
Well, that's true, and it's the family politics, and the parents do have some right and obligation if they feel this way to see to the application of the money that the extended family has provided for everybody. I think that may be one of the slippery slopes of our business, that marriage is primarily for two people, and the more people that get involved in that relationship, the more harrowing it can be. There are a lot of different folks that you have to try to keep happy if you're not careful.
Now, is the law with regard to prenuptial agreements and their enforceability, is it the same whether I'm in Maryland or Montana, or should people make sure that they speak with lawyers in their own state? Allison mentioned Maryland, which is where we all practice, but do the laws differ from one state to another?
Yes, indeed they do. One of the big differences that we've seen in the recent past is something called a look back rule. We don't have it here. And that means that part of the enforceability of a contract actually does look at the fairness of the agreement when it's enforced, not just the fairness of the agreement when it's entered into. So an agreement will have a choice, usually it should have a choice of law provision that should fix that at the time of the execution. Not necessarily what the law will be, but what state's law will apply to the interpretation of that agreement.
I see. All right. Well, thanks to both of you for showing up today. That's all we have. That's all the time we have. I want to thank both of you for joining us today on JGL Law for You. Allison and Pat, let's start with you, Allison. If people want to reach you to discuss a prenuptial agreement or any other family law matter, how would they reach out to you?
Sure. So you can find me on the firm's website, jglaw.com. You can also call me at the office. My direct number is 240-399-7891.
All right. And Pat, how would folks reach out to you?
As with Allison, you can reach me through the website. And my phone number at the office is 240-399-7900. And either I will be there to answer or I will get back to you.
All right. Again, thanks everyone for listening. It's not romantic, but before you decide to take that plunge, and while you're picking out cake and wine and food, make sure you give either Pat or Allison a phone call. I'm David Bullitt, and this is JGL Law for You.